Let's have your coat. Morgan took off her coat and handed it over. The cold air swept through her and she shivered as she turned around. Turn out your jeans pockets, he said. Use two fingers. She turned her jeans pockets inside out and handed him the keys to the Jeep. The rest of her belongings were in her tote bag, which she'd left in the Jeep. The sheriff handcuffed her and gave her a cursory pat-down, skipping the more intimate areas of her body, something she was positive he would not do when arresting a female stranger. He was being a gentleman while he arrested her, a fact that was ridiculous, all on its own. What are the charges? Morgan asked.
I'm starting with loitering, harassment, stalking, and impeding an investigation, he said. I'm sure I'll think of some more during the drive.
With a solid hand on her arm, he guided her to the back door of the vehicle. Then he put a gentle hand on the top of her head as she slid into the vehicle. Scooting across the bench seat in handcuffs was harder than Morgan anticipated. The door closed. The physical restraint of the handcuffs and the cage separating the back and front seats felt claustrophobic. She glanced over her shoulder and watched the sheriff going through their coat pockets. Lance's jacket held his cell phone, a miniature screwdriver, and a small flashlight. From Morgan's coat, the sheriff pulled her phone, a wad of tissues, a lip balm, and two lollipops. The second lollipop was sticky and covered in lint, having been licked and rewrapped when Sophie had discovered she didn't like green apple. With a disgusted sneer, the sheriff wiped his hand on the thigh of his uniform, then bagged their personal possessions.
I can't believe he's arresting us.
Lance glared out the side window. We'll call Sharp from the station, Morgan said. He'll get us out. Lance shook his head.
Knowing the sheriff, he'll stick us in a holding cell overnight, just to prove he can.
I messaged Sharp earlier. He knows where we are. He'll look for us.
He won't think to call the sheriff.
Probably not, Morgan agreed. We'll survive the night in a holding cell.
You know what holding cells are like.
Lance frowned at her.
You don't belong in one.
In her former life as a prosecutor, Morgan had interviewed plenty of criminals. Holding cells, like other jail and prison facilities, were disgusting, filthy places, with open toilets and the lingering scent of vomit. From the outside, the sights and smells could gag someone with a strong stomach. The thought of being locked in one wasn't pleasant. I'm aware of that, but there's nothing we can do about it now. Morgan was less surprised at their arrest than Lance. He and the sheriff had butted heads one too many times. They were equally hard-headed, but the sheriff had the law on his side. Sheriff King had warned them, and Lance was right. King was just arrogant enough to want to prove he had the upper hand. The sheriff collected their belongings and put them in his trunk. Morgan turned to Lance. You need to remain silent. I mean it. Don't say a single word to the sheriff or anyone else at the station. Male and female prisoners were not held together. She suspected Lance would be put in the holding cell, and the sheriff would handcuff her to a bench somewhere. She sensed they had finally pushed King over the line. Cooperate, but exercise your right to be silent. Anything you say will be used against you. Anything.
I know.
Lance's shoulders fell.
I'm sorry. I should have listened to you tonight. You were right. We should have called the sheriff and told him about Stan. Now we've lost a whole night.
It'll be all right. Morgan shivered. Lance shifted closer, pressing his shoulder against hers.
I can't help protect my mother from a jail cell. And now that we're getting locked up, Stan is free to do what he wants.
Stella and Brody are with your mother tonight, Morgan said. The sheriff climbed into the driver's seat, ending their conversation. As the vehicle pulled away from the curb, Morgan turned and glanced back at Stan's bright-as-day neighborhood. Stan had seen them following his car. And he'd gone on the offensive, smartly turning the tables on them. No one was watching him now. Chapter 42. Through the window of the sheriff's vehicle, Lance watched the dark landscape roll by. Flurries whizzed past. They stopped at an intersection and the sheriff turned left when he should have made a right. Where was he taking them?
Hey!
Lance called through the wire mesh that divided the front and rear seats.
The sheriff's station is in the other direction.
We're not going to the station, the sheriff said. You need to be taught a lesson.
Lance glanced at Morgan. The sheriff was angry enough to inflict some payback on Lance, but surely King wouldn't hurt her, would he?
Whatever you have in mind for me, drop Morgan somewhere,
Lance said to King's reflection in the rearview mirror. King ignored him. Morgan nudged Lance with her elbow, her eyes wide and worried. But what could Lance do? They were handcuffed in the back of a police car, a place designed specifically to keep people contained. The landscape became more and more rural. The sheriff turned onto a long country road. Lance snapped to attention. He knew where they were going. Gray Lake. A few minutes later, the trees opened. The lake shimmered in the darkness, but the car continued past the area where his father's Buick had been dragged from the water. 2 miles later, the sheriff turned onto a dirt lane in a thick patch of forest. Discomfort shifted to paranoia as the trees closed around the car. The car rolled to a stop. A small clearing opened to their left. The sheriff stepped out of the vehicle and opened the rear door.
Get out.
Was he going to leave them out here? He'd taken their coats and the temperature was hovering around freezing. As far as Lance knew, the closest houses were on the other side of the lake. The hike was at least 5 miles.
No.
Lance shook his head. Next to him, Morgan shivered. The sheriff reached into the car, grabbed her by the arm, and pulled her out of the vehicle.
Hey!
Lance yelled, anger and terror churning inside him.
Don't hurt her!
Then get your ass out here,
King called, dragging Morgan into the beam of the headlights. Still holding her bicep, King crooked a finger at Lance. Morgan's face was as pale as the snowflake swirling around her dark hair. Lance scrambled out of the car. Whatever the sheriff had planned, Lance couldn't let Morgan face it alone. He walked across the clearing and stopped in front of the sheriff. King released Morgan's arm and stepped away from her toward the car.
You can't leave us out here.
Facing the sheriff, Lance put his body between King and Morgan. They were in the middle of nowhere. With the falling temperatures, Morgan wouldn't make it. Surely the sheriff knew that. But King didn't respond.
Dispatch will have a record of Stan's call, Lance argued. They'll know we were with you.
Stan didn't call.
Do you really think that dumbass spotted you?
The sheriff snorted.
I was looking for you. You weren't that hard to find. You're predictable, and I'm a very good hunter. It's all about knowing your prey and being able to predict its movements.
Sharp will figure it out.
Lance tried to think of an argument, even though it would be futile. The sheriff had already gone beyond the law, beyond reason.
I'm not worried about Sharp,
King said. Morgan seemed to shake off her shock.
What do you mean? Leave us out here? You can't do that.
The chatter of her teeth punctuated her words.
I can do whatever I want,
King said in a voice as cold as the falling snow.
But I have no intention of leaving you out here to freeze.
Lance took a deep breath.
What a prick.
The frigid air felt like needles in his lungs. Was this all an attempt to intimidate them? To scare them out of ever crossing him again? Morgan's whole body was shaking now, and her shoulders hunched against the cold. The misery on her face stoked rage inside Lance's chest. If the sheriff thought he could get away with a stunt like this, with a PI and a lawyer... Wait. Even the sheriff's ego wasn't that big. A PI didn't have much clout, but a respected lawyer? A former prosecutor did. Plus, Morgan had connections. Nearly every member of her family was or had been in law enforcement.
This is kidnapping,
Morgan said in a quivering voice.
You'll never get away with it.
No. The sheriff wouldn't get away with leaving them to hike out of the woods in the cold. He had no intention of letting them hike anywhere. Lance could see it in King's eyes. A veil of detachment slid down like a curtain. Anger and frustration faded. The cool that replaced emotion in his eyes was stone cold. He was going to kill them.
why? Lance's belly chilled as if he'd swallowed snow. He had no time to analyze the sheriff's motive. Whatever the reasons, Lance could not let Morgan die. Instead of drawing his service weapon, King reached into his pocket. Lance shifted onto the balls of his feet. The sheriff had a spare gun. Before he cleared it from his pocket, Lance charged him. His shoulder hit the sheriff in the ribs, knocking him off balance. King stumbled backward. Without his arms for balance, Lance went down too. But he was younger and more athletic than the sheriff. He landed on his opposite shoulder and rolled. Momentum carried him back to his feet.
Morgan, run!
He shouted. She turned and fled into the woods. The sheriff turned onto his stomach, got one foot under his body and reached for his weapon again. Lance rushed him again, body slamming him a second time. Prepared, the sheriff stayed on his feet. Lance jumped back and drilled a front kick into his solar plexus. But the sheriff was wearing his body armor and the kick had little impact, except to throw him off balance one more time. King recovered quickly and reached for his weapon again, his face a mask of determination. If he killed Lance, Morgan would be easy to hunt down. Jumping forward, Lance brought his forehead down onto the sheriff's nose. Blood squirted and the sheriff went down on his ass. But King had his gun out of its holster. Before he could aim, Lance kicked his arm and sprinted for the trees. A gunshot echoed through the woods. The bullet hit a tree a few feet to Lance's right. A piece of debris struck Lance in the face, but the sting barely lasted a second. He turned around a large pine and zigzagged. He had two objectives. Stay alive and find Morgan. Chapter 43. A gunshot rang through the thin air. Startled, Morgan stumbled. With her hands behind her back, she had no hands to catch her fall. She went down on one knee. Pain shot through her kneecap, but it was fleeting and adrenaline blotted it out. Lance. Had King shot him? Branches crashed. Lance? Or King? Continue to run or circle back? Morgan's lungs burned. Her thighs burned. Everything burned. The most running she'd done in the last 6 years was teaching Ava how to ride a bike. Trying to find any sort of stride on the uneven forest floor with her hands bound behind her back felt impossible. She didn't want to leave Lance behind if he was wounded. But if he wasn't wounded, he would catch up easily. She would be the one to slow him down. She put her feet together and squatted until her chest pressed against her thighs. She slid her bound hands under her butt until they were behind her knees. Then she rocked onto her back and wiggled her feet through one at a time. When she stood, her hands were in front of her body. A rock the size of a fist on the ground caught her eye. She grabbed it, pushed to her feet, and broke into a jog. Out of breath, she sucked the freezing air in through her mouth. If it was King on her trail, he'd hear her gasping for air from a mile away. Lungs on fire, she ducked behind a tree. The crashing came closer. Once she stopped moving, Morgan shivered. She pressed against the tree trunk, using it as a shield and windblock. Please let it be Lance. Steeling herself, she peered around the tree and raised the rock over her head. A body flew toward her. Black pants, black shirt. Legs churning, stride sure and swift despite the hands bound behind him. Lance. Relief weakened her for a second. Then she pushed away from the tree and staggered toward him. Keep going. He barely broke stride, his voice just a whisper. She stumbled after him. She had no idea how far her initial sprint had taken her, except that it wasn't far enough. He slowed his pace and lined his shoulder up with hers. For him, the pace was a light jog.
Where is he?
She whispered in three pants.
I don't know,
Lance said, his words barely audible over the sound of her footsteps. He frowned at her.
Let's walk for a minute.
She slowed to a walk. A stitch in her side doubled her over. She pressed her hands against it. He glanced over his shoulder.
Fairly sure I broke his nose, but I doubt that'll slow him down for long. You need to keep moving. You got through your handcuffs?
I fell.
She huffed and puffed, her lungs working like fireplace bellows to catch up on airflow. But the incoming air was so cold she felt like she was inhaling needles.
Seemed like a good time.
He nodded and veered to the left. Morgan jerked her hands to the right.
But the road is that way.
It's unlikely that a car will come by this late at night. The road is too open. They'll catch us. There are houses on the other side of the lake.
He scanned the darkness.
Our best chance is to keep the lake on one side.
Morgan's gasps and heart rate slowed, but with reduced activity, the cold hit her hard.
Can you move faster now?
He asked. She nodded and broke into a heavy, toe-dragging jog. She tripped. A thin branch cracked under her foot, the sound carrying through the quiet woods. She regained her balance, but the temperature and exhaustion were taking their toll. Her movements were clumsy. She was running as fast as she could. He wasn't even breathing hard. He could move a lot faster without her. She would slow him down. He was going to get killed because of her.
You should run ahead and get help, she said. I won't make it. It's too cold and I'm too out of shape.
I will not leave you. We are stronger together, remember?
But tonight she was the weak link in their partnership. Physically, she could not match Lance's strength and conditioning. She hadn't even begun to process what the sheriff had done. Did this mean King had killed Crystal and the Houlihans? What about Mary? Had the sheriff tried to kill Lance's mother? Why? Whatever it was must be related to Mary's death and Vic's disappearance. King had been the chief deputy in 1994. Only one thing linked the sheriff's department to August 10th, 1994. Lou Ford's death. A mental image of Eric's bruised face appeared in her mind. My face hit the floor when the sheriff handcuffed me. The sheriff had used excessive force when he'd arrested Eric. Had he been involved in Ford's death? How? King hadn't been the arresting officer. As chief deputy, had he initiated a cover-up? Morgan tripped over a rock and stumbled to her knees. The pain brought her back to the present. Lance took her fall as an opportunity to roll to his back and work his cuffed hands in front of his body, the same way she had. She got her foot under her body and stood, swaying from lack of oxygen. They paused for a moment. Morgan caught her breath. Lance listened. He put his lips to her ear. I don't hear him.
He's out there.
Morgan felt the sheriff behind them. A shadowy presence. A threat that her body recognized even if her eyes and ears couldn't discern his location.
Stop thinking, he whispered. Just put one foot in front of the other.
But they both knew that King wouldn't let them go. He was out there. And he was coming after them. Chapter 44. He should have known Kruger wouldn't go down without a fight. Face aching, he climbed to his feet and holstered his pistol. Kruger was too far away to hit with a handgun. He watched the handcuffed man disappear into the trees. Kruger moved with impressive speed and agility. But he wasn't worried. He walked to the rear of his vehicle and opened the trunk. Opening his first aid kit, he mopped the blood from his face. He punched an instant ice pack and held it over his throbbing nose. Kruger had likely broken it. A few minutes with an ice pack now might stave off some swelling. Clogged nasal passages would slow him down. Besides, he was in no rush. They were miles away from help, and even Kruger couldn't run at top speed through the woods in the dark. The PI would have to slow down or risk breaking an ankle. But even if Kruger could make good time, he didn't have to catch Kruger. He only had to catch Ms. Dane. The counselor was smart, loyal, and determined. But she was not athletic. And Kruger would never leave her. The key to a successful hunt is knowing your prey and being able to predict its behavior. They were both handcuffed and unarmed. No one knew where they were. He moved aside the evidence bag containing Kruger's and Dane's personal possessions. When he'd stashed their phones in the trunk, he'd removed the batteries. No one would be able to track them. Their last known location was outside Stan Adams's house. If Dane's sister on the SFPD went looking for her, that was where she'd start.
Maybe he could plant some evidence at Stan's house. He'd sort it out later. Tonight, his focus had to be on stopping Kruger and Dane. Those two were relentless. They'd discovered Lou Ford's death. It was only a matter of time until they tied Ford's death to Mary's. He removed the battery from his own phone. He wanted no GPS record of his upcoming trek through the woods either. After laying the ice pack aside, he took 4 ibuprofen tablets from his kit and swallowed them with water. He stripped off his coat and uniform shirt and tossed his Kevlar vest into the trunk. Kruger and Dane weren't armed and the vest would slow him down. Instead, he layered a long-sleeve thermal shirt and a fleece pullover, then put his coat back on. He exchanged his campaign hat for a wool cap. Then he began loading his many pockets. Water, protein bars, spare fully loaded magazines, a flashlight he wouldn't use unless necessary, a compass, fire starter sticks, and matches. He didn't plan to be out all night, but a good hunter was always prepared. Reaching back into the trunk, he added a silver emergency blanket. His hunting cabin was at the end of this lane. He knew every game trail in the woods around the lake well. He would not let Kruger and Dane get away. His future depended on catching them. He returned the first aid kit to his trunk and removed his AR-15 from the rack mounted under his trunk lid, wishing he'd thought to bring his personal hunting rifle. For deer hunting, he preferred the .30-06. His personal rifle fired a larger, heavier bullet with more stopping power at a greater distance. He'd seen too many deer shot with the light AR-15 rounds get up and run, needing to be finished off with another shot. But he'd have to be close to hit his target in the dark anyway. And if possible, he wouldn't use his official weapon. He stooped and picked up the handgun he'd dropped when Kruger kicked him. He'd taken it off a stupid kid a few months before and kept it, just in case he would need a gun to toss next to a suspect. He slid it into his pocket. He'd planned to use the throwaway weapon to kill Kruger and Dane before they'd gotten away. He hadn't expected to have to hunt them down. Kruger's rush had thrown a wrench into his plans. He should have expected it. The PI was more dangerous than he'd thought. He wouldn't underestimate him again. The rifle felt balanced and comfortable in his hands. It would do. He closed the trunk and turned to the woods. Time to go hunting. Chapter 45. Sharp left the store with a new phone in his hand. His account data freshly downloaded from his cloud account to the device. A series of messages from Lance popped onto the screen. Sharp read them, stunned by the news that someone had tried to kill Jenny in the ICU and that Stan was now the top suspect. He dialed Lance's number, but the call went directly to voicemail. He left a message.
Call me after you and Morgan question Stan. One of the boys set up a meeting for me with someone who was at the sheriff's station on August 10th, 1994. I'll let you know if I learn anything interesting.
Sharp pressed end, slid his phone into his pocket and drove to the meeting location, Bridge Park. He stopped his Prius in front of the Revolutionary War Monument and parked next to an old Chevy Chevette at the base of the old stone bridge that spanned the Scarlet River. A figure hunched on one of the 3 wooden benches facing the water. Sharp zipped his jacket, making sure his sidearm was accessible. He might not like to carry a weapon, but considering the rate people were dropping in this case, he'd make an exception. He got out of the car. Snow fell in lazy eddies of wind and gathered on the grass as he walked across it. The figure on the bench stood.
Are you Sharp?
Ned?
Yes.
Ned eased back onto the bench. He was in his 70s. The black wool coat and fedora he wore were old and threadbare.
We could have met somewhere warmer.
Sharp turned his face away from the wind. Ned shook his head.
This meeting is not public. I'm only talking to you because I owe Bill. He pulled my kid out of a car wreck years ago.
He craned his neck to give the area a nervous scan.
What are you afraid of?
Sharp asked.
Have you seen all the dead people lately?
Ned's tone hinted that his fear was justified and obvious.
Bill says you're investigating the skeleton they pulled out of the lake a few days ago.
Yes,
Sharp said.
The skeleton was identified as Mary Fox. She disappeared August 10th, 1994. Bill tells me you were working that night.
Ned nodded.
But no one knows I saw anything, and that's exactly how I want it to stay.
He took a deep, audible breath.
I was a janitor in those days. I took care of the sheriff's station and a couple of other small county buildings. Sheriff's station got cleaned twice a week.
He toyed with a hole in the thumb of his black leather glove.
I was in the maintenance closet, getting ready to mop floors. There was a commotion in the hallway. The door was open a couple of inches. I looked out. The sheriff, he was Chief Deputy King back then, he was bringing a young woman in through the back door.
A chill settled low in Sharp's gut. Mary? Ned continued.
There wasn't a camera covering every single inch of the station in those days. The back corridor was a blind spot. Deputy Walsh was struggling with a drunk. King cuffed the woman to a ring next to the payphone that used to be there. He handed her a quarter, told her to make a call, and went to help Walsh. The drunk was raising a ruckus, shouting and cursing and thrashing around. Neither King nor Walsh had any patience left. They beat on him. Then he got real quiet.
Lou Ford? Ned paused to catch his breath. He raised his eyes and stared out over the river.
I backed into the dark part of that closet. I didn't want either of them to know I saw. I didn't come out until they were both gone.
What happened to the woman?
Sharp asked.
I heard King offer her a deal. He dropped the charges against her if she promised to keep her mouth shut about what she saw.
Ned paused.
He took her right out the back door. Never brought her inside the station.
King might have offered Mary a deal, but he didn't live up to his end of the bargain. Ned set his hands on his thighs and pushed to his feet.
I don't know anything else. That's all I saw.
He raised a hand, palm toward Sharp.
Before you ask, I will not testify. Nor will I admit this conversation ever took place. Not unless King is 6 feet underground or in a prison cell. He isn't the kind of man who lets things go.
You think Sheriff King is killing people?
Sheriff asked.
There ain't anybody else left. Walsh moved to Florida. I heard he was dying.
Ned shivered.
Walsh. He was shook up when he realized the prisoner was dead, but King just shrugged it off like it was no big deal. The sheriff is one cold-blooded SOB.
Thanks, Ned.
Nothing to thank me for. We never talked.
Ned walked toward the beat-up Chevy. Sharp went back to his car and started the engine. Holding his hands to the heat vents, he chewed Ned's revelation down to the bone. King must have killed Mary. Once Sharp's brain made that connection, everything started to make sense. Events slid into place, clicking like the tumblers in a lock when the right key was inserted. They'd thought King was running a parallel investigation. In reality, he had known all the players ahead of time and had used his investigation time to kill off any potential witnesses. If Brian had dropped Mary back at PJ's that night, Mary must have been arrested at the same time as Lou Ford. The other two men had been taken directly to the ER. It made sense that every deputy on duty had been called to the bar fight. At least one would have accompanied the additional two men to the ER. If King saw Mary proposition someone, he might have arrested her too. If PJ saw King arrest Mary, then once Mary's body turned up and they connected Mary's death to the bar fight, they'd put those pieces together right in the sheriff's conference room, which put Sharp, Lance, and Morgan all at risk. Sharp picked up his phone, a sick feeling rolling around in his belly. He dialed Lance. Still no answer. Sharp's unease grew as he tried Morgan's line. She didn't pick up either. He sent them each a text.
Morgan, always worried about family emergencies, paid close attention to her phone. Sharp lowered his phone to his leg, his brain still churning out possibilities. What happened to Vic? And why kill Crystal and try to kill Jenny? What if Mary made that phone call? She would have called Crystal, so Crystal would have known that Mary had been in the station. Was King eliminating anyone who knew that he'd arrested Mary that night? KJ and Crystal could have been able to link King and Mary on August 10th, a connection that didn't matter until Mary's body turned up. But Sharp had no theories about how Vic or Jenny played into the scenario. His phone buzzed a few seconds later. Hoping it was Lance, Sharp snapped it up. Disappointment filled him as he read the name of his Florida PI contact on the screen. He answered,
"Sharp here."
The Florida PI got right to business.
"Owen Walsh is in a hospice facility dying of cancer. He's medicated and sleeping right now. He doesn't have any family to object, so I'm hanging here with him, hoping he wakes up and wants to talk. I'll let you know if I learn anything."
"Thanks,"
Sharp said.
"Pressure him about Lou Ford's death. Convince him he wants to go to his maker with a clean conscience." "You had a break in the case."
"I did. Now I need a deathbed confession."
Ending the call, Sharp lowered the phone and stared at it. Morgan should have returned his message by now. He accessed the app that would let him track Lance's phone. The wait symbol rotated and rotated and rotated. Phone not found. Ned's statement played in Sharp's head on repeat. The sheriff is one cold-blooded SOB. Sharp needed to find Lance and Morgan fast, and he needed help. He dialed Brody. Chapter 46. A half inch of snow dusted the ground. Spotting a game trail, Lance pulled Morgan onto it. The cleared ground would be easier for her to navigate with fewer large obstacles to trip her up. On the downside, they would also be easier to track if they followed the path. But at this point, he didn't know how far the sheriff was behind them. King wasn't a runner, but he was an experienced hunter and outdoorsman. They were going to be easy to follow no matter where they ran. Lance hoped the trail led to the lake. If they kept the water to their right, that would eliminate one side of possible attack. The sheriff would have to come up behind them or on their left flank. Lance had no doubt King would catch up with them eventually. Morgan was freezing and exhausted and running on pure willpower. But he couldn't let her stop. Once she was still, hypothermia would take over, though he could carry her at that point. They had no coats, no food, no water, and no method of communication. Their only option was to keep moving and pray that they found help before King found them. Wishing he could get out of the handcuffs, Lance eyed Morgan's hair. As gorgeous as it was tumbling around her shoulders, today would have been a good day for one of her courtroom buns and the dozen hairpins that secured them. He was a decent lockpick.
"No chance you have a hairpin on you."
"No, sorry."
Her teeth chattered and her words quivered. Helplessness flooded Lance. There was nothing he could do to protect her. He squinted through the woods. Had they even traveled a mile yet? How close was King? The sheriff would be warm and dry and armed. He'd be in no rush. He'd hunt them with steady, dogged determination. The snow picked up, just hard enough for them to leave footprints, not hard enough to fill in those prints as they walked. Their dark clothes, which had been excellent camouflage earlier in the evening, now silhouetted them against a white backdrop. The cold blew through the thin sleeves of his shirt, and a shiver swept through his bones. If this night dragged on long enough, the cold would kill them as surely as a bullet. Morgan stumbled again. Lance caught her arm in his hands. Could he hide her somewhere, then lead the sheriff away? He rejected the option. If the sheriff shot him, she was done. A fire would lead the sheriff right to her, and without one, hypothermia would kill her before morning. The sound of water moving in the darkness caught his attention. The lake? Evergreen boughs closed in on the trail, smacking him in the face and blotting out the scant light from the overcast sky. He released Morgan's arm to separate the branches. As they neared the sound, he realized it wasn't the lake he'd heard, but a stream, which likely fed into Gray Lake. The trail opened suddenly, the ground dropped off, and Lance teetered on the edge of an embankment. If it hadn't been for the white of the snow at his feet, he wouldn't have noticed the steep drop-off. He stepped into Morgan's path. Morgan bumped into his back, then froze. Leaning over his shoulder, she pressed her lips to his ear.
"What is it?"
He leaned to the side so she could see. With her body touching his, he felt the intense shivering racking her body. She was shaking so hard she could barely stay upright. Ahead, the stream cut through a deep gully 20 feet below the game trail. During the spring, it likely ran much higher on its banks. There had to be a path leading down to the water. Turning his head, he whispered, "Keep moving," and nudged her gently along a 2-foot-wide path that ran along the side of the gully. Morgan's lack of balance worried him.
"Put your hand on my shoulder," he said.
Her grip was weak and trembling. He was freezing. Morgan had less body fat and lower overall body mass than he did. Her long limbs and thin body gave her more surface area from which to lose heat. But there wasn't a damn thing he could do to help her. With King on their trail, they couldn't stop to build a fire or shelter. They had to find a place to cross the stream. The snow helped illuminate the ground at their feet, but the topography forced them to slow down. They shuffled along, careful with each footstep. The quiet of the snowy woods was broken only by the gurgle of the stream. Lance looked as far ahead as the darkness would allow. He had roughly 20 feet of decent visibility. Beyond that, the woods were dark nothing. Ahead, the path widened, the embankment becoming gradual enough that they should be able to scramble down without killing themselves. He pointed with both hands and looked over his shoulder at Morgan at his left flank. She nodded and kept walking. The snowfall picked up. A glance at the trail behind them showed the flakes settling into their tracks. Maybe King wouldn't find them. Maybe they had a chance after all. Morgan stumbled. Lance spun and lunged for her, but her feet slid over the edge. She clawed at nearby branches for a handhold. Lance caught her arm, his feet skidding a few inches in the snow. He fought for traction, his boots sliding closer and closer to the edge. Her eyes were wide open and shining with fear. If she fell... Lance's boot hit a rock. Bracing against it, he hauled her back up onto the path, pivoted and pushed her away from the edge, his heart hammering. She fell to her knees, but she was safe. Rocks shifted. The ground dropped out from under Lance's feet. He plunged downward, his body banging into tree trunks, broken branches tearing at his limbs. A hot bolt of pain licked at his leg. He slammed into a rock. A bone cracked, and pain rocketed through his side. Then everything went black. Chapter 47. Morgan knelt on the edge of the embankment. A rush of panic lent her body renewed strength. Holding onto a tree, she leaned over the edge.
"Lance?"
She shifted her weight, trying to get a better view through the foliage. Beneath her knees, the ground crumbled. Another fat section broke away and tumbled down the slope. Morgan scrambled for solid footing.
"Where is he?"
Feet first, she stepped down and planted her boot on a tree root. Her finger slipped from their grip on the tree. When she found a new handhold on a rock, she left a smear of blood behind. She used snow to wipe the blood away, then pulled the sleeve of her sweater over the cut. She didn't want to leave that obvious a trail. But she was too cold, too numb to feel the cut on her palm. She moved carefully, making sure each new hand and foothold was secure before releasing the previous grip. She wouldn't be able to help Lance if she fell too, and having her hands cuffed together made the descent awkward. It seemed to take forever to work her way into the gully. She was near the bottom when she spotted his black-clad form and bright blonde hair on the snow. He lay still at the base of the slope, a few inches from the meandering stream. If he'd tumbled farther,
he would have drowned. He has to be all right. As if answering her thoughts, he stirred. His head lifted and turned as he scanned the stream bed. She slid down the remaining few feet of bank and dropped to her knees beside him. She tried to run her hands over his body to assess his injuries, but she couldn't feel anything. Her hands and feet felt like heavy blocks of ice. She slid her hands over his legs. Her fingers came away from his calf, wet with fresh blood. She parted a slash in his pants. A deep gash ran through his calf, blood ran from the wound, but she doubted the cut was the reason he hadn't risen. Where else are you hurt?
Ribs. Leg.
He said through blue-white lips.
Help me up.
Are you sure? He hoisted his body into a sitting position. His face went gray and the skin of his face stretched tight as a drum. Despite the cold, his injuries clearly weren't numb.
We have to keep moving.
We need to stop that bleeding. She got her shoulder under his arm. The handcuffs got in the way. With his feet under him, he walked two steps and doubled over, his hands pressing against his ribs. Broken? She asked.
I don't know. Maybe not.
Hold on. We're leaving a blood trail in the snow. But what could she use to stop the bleeding? They had no supplies, nothing. Her belt or his bootlace weren't any good without a bandage of some sort. She must have something she could tie around his leg. There was only one thing she could think of. She snaked her freezing hands into the neck of her sweater and slipped her bra straps down her shoulders. Unhooking the straps with frozen fingers was harder, but she fumbled through it. She gave Lance her back. Unhook my bra. Lance made a choking sound.
What?
It's the only thing I can think of to use as a bandage.
Smart.
His fingers slid up the back of her sweater. With the shoulder straps already unhooked, her bra fell to her waist and she tugged it out from under her sweater.
This is going to hurt. You might want to sit down.
She folded it in half.
Getting up was too hard.
He grabbed a tree limb and held tight. She pressed the folded bra against the wound, then used the straps to tie it in place. Not secure enough. She took off her belt and wrapped it around his calf. It held, and the light padding of her bra absorbed the blood.
That's the best I can do, she said.
I'm impressed.
Lance took a step forward. His face creased with pain, but he was no longer dripping blood.
We need to assess our options.
We have options?
Walking next to him, Morgan brought her arms close to her body, her hands under her chin. Snowflakes dotted the sleeves of her wool sweater. Her brain was frozen. She could barely think.
We can continue to follow the water. Once we reach the lake, at least we'll have a clear direction and distance to travel. But thanks to my fall, we're moving very slowly now.
Morgan glanced behind her at the clear lines of footprints in the snow.
And he's going to catch us.
She picked up a tree limb and dragged it behind them, trying to obscure their tracks. In real life, it didn't work as well as it did in the movies. Lance squinted over his shoulder.
We know he's a hunter. He's experienced in the woods. He'll have provisions, and he has time on his side.
We can move faster if you lean on me, she offered.
I'm too heavy, and you're already exhausted. One of us needs to be able to break away and run if necessary.
Holding his ribs, he frowned at his leg.
That's not going to be me now.
You would never leave me, and I would never leave you, so I rule that one out.
He sighed.
You're going to have an open mind. When I said we had options, I never said any of them were good options.
What's option number two?
She asked. His sideways glance told her she was going to like this choice even less than the last.
You leave me and run for help,
he said. The choking sound that came out of her mouth was part exhaustion, part horror,
The thought of their lives being dependent on her being able to run far or fast under good conditions was terrifying. She'd been raised in the city. Her family hadn't moved to Scarlet Falls until after her father had been killed in the line of duty. She'd been in high school. The woods were not her natural habitat, and in this cold she felt like a baby giraffe taking its first steps. Every inch of her shook. She was barely putting one foot in front of the other. At any second, she could faceplant in the snow. "How far would I get?" she asked. "Even injured, you'd probably get farther than I would." He shook his head. How badly was he hurt? "We're back to me not leaving you out here."
"I'm not helpless,"
he said. "What kind of long gun does the sheriff's department carry?" She side-eyed him. "This is no insult to your masculinity, but you don't stand a chance against an AR-15.
"Look, if only one of us is going to get out of this, it has to be you. I don't have 3 kids at home. Your girls have already lost their father. I will not allow them to lose their mother, too."
And there it was, Lance's very nature. He was so different from her late husband in almost every way. John had been tall and thin, with a light-hearted and easygoing personality. Lance was athletic, heavily muscled, and intense to his core. But the two men she had fallen in love with had one essential quality in common. Deep in their hearts, they were both heroes. John had given his life for his country, and Lance was prepared to die for her and her girls right here and now. But she couldn't accept the thought of letting him sacrifice himself for her.
"We have to think of something else."
"But what?"
"We need to outthink the sheriff. We need a plan."
She grasped for an idea. What had King said? "It's all about knowing your prey and being able to predict its movements." More numb than cold, she tripped over her own boot. As she righted herself, her knees buckled. She grabbed a tree to stay upright. "If you get out of this alive, you will start exercising." But future promises weren't going to help her now.
"We need to do something he doesn't expect," she said. "We need to use his own behavioral patterns to predict his movements. What is his end goal?"
Lance turned back to the path. His leg was bleeding again.
"The only thing that King wants is us to be dead."
A twig cracked. Lance shoved Morgan into the bushes.
"Hide."
She fell on her hands and knees, crawling under the branches of a blue spruce. Chapter 48. Crouching, King scanned the ground. Their footprints were ridiculously easy to follow in the snow. This wasn't even going to be a challenge. They couldn't be too far ahead, or the snow would have obliterated their tracks. They were following a game trail toward Gray Lake. Once they reached it, Kruger would take them around to the populated side of the lake. It was a solid plan. But Miss Dane was not in top condition. She was smart and tough, but physically she was soft. It was no insult, she was a hell of a woman, though maybe a bit too intelligent. In his opinion, women shouldn't try to compete with men. But even with that one flaw, Miss Dane was the first woman he'd ever admired. Not that he desired her. He had no interest in a relationship with anyone. He liked being alone. But for the first time, he might have a real regret after he killed someone. Not that it would stop him. If he had to choose between Miss Dane and himself, the choice was damn simple. Besides, women made men weak. Miss Dane would be the end of Kruger. Like a wolf targeting the weakest, trailing member of the herd, King only had to catch up with her. Kruger would be at her side. He'd kill the pair of them and dispose of their bodies. No one would find them. Either he'd borrow a boat and sink them in the middle of the lake, or he'd bury them, where he'd left Vic in 94.
Wouldn't it be ironic to put Kruger next to the father he'd been looking for all these years? He straightened and followed the trail of footprints. The snow had brightened the landscape enough that he didn't need his flashlight. He followed their trail. They were headed toward the stream that fed the lake. The woods opened at the edge of a gully. If he hadn't known it was there, he might have slid into it. The footprints turned toward the lake, following the flow of the water. He kept as far away from the drop-off as possible, stopping when the ground in front of him fell away. He crouched again. Digging the flashlight from his pocket, he risked a quick look at the trail. He did not want to end up in the gully. But beneath the fresh landslide, he saw a clear path through broken foliage. Something large had gone over the edge. One of them had fallen. Anticipation surged through his veins as he illuminated the slope, searching for a way down. He picked his way carefully down to the bottom of the embankment and examined the ground. They'd spent some time here, and the tracks leading away were different. He spotted something red in the snow. Blood. One of them was injured. That's why the footprints were closer together. More shuffling and less striding. The stream ran through the bottom of a deep gully. The embankments were steep, hard enough for a fit man to climb, let alone an injured person. They'd be stuck in the gully until it reached the lake. This would almost be too easy. He followed their trail, breaking into a light jog, excitement invigorating him. The hunt was almost over. After he'd eliminated Kruger and Dane, he'd take care of Sharp. Then he was home free. Every thread between him and Mary would be severed. Almost all, he corrected. But Owen Walsh would be dead soon enough. Paranoid Owen, who had been riddled with guilt and fear for more than 2 decades. Owen had called him the second Lincoln Sharp had attempted to make contact. Now Owen had only weeks to live. Cancer was eating him with the same efficiency as his conscience had over the years. Soon Owen would be gone, and he would be the only one who knew what had happened that night. In the parking lot of PJ's, he assessed the fallout. 3 drunken fools had beaten the crap out of each other over a woman. If the 3 men had been less drunk and more intelligent, at least one of them would have realized that Mary was a hooker. She would have done all of them in turn for the right amount of money. What a bunch of assholes. As chief deputy, it was his responsibility to sort the mess out. He pointed to one of the deputies on duty.
Bill, you follow those 2 idiots to the ER. When they've been cleared, bring them into the station for processing.
He turned to another deputy.
Oh, and you drive this asshole to the station.
He handed off Lou Ford. Still cursing and arguing and being a drunken pain in the ass, Lou was a frequent flyer in the drunken disorderly department. Mary tried to slink off through the parking lot, but he spotted her.
You're under arrest, too,
he said once he'd caught up with her. She propped a fist on her hip. You're kidding.
We both know I have no sense of humor.
He cuffed her and put her in his patrol car. Like Lou Ford, it wasn't her first ride in his back seat.
PJ is tired of you soliciting customers. He says you're fired, by the way.
He followed Owen back to the station. Mary was compliant, but not even a quart of wild turkey would make Lou Ford cooperate. He cursed and thrashed and dragged his feet. They entered the back door of the station and he brought Mary into the corridor.
Don't I get a phone call?
She sulked.
I need to call my mama.
Little help here?
Owen called out from the doorway. Lou had planted his feet like a mule, leaning back and refusing to budge.
Son of a...
He unlocked one of Mary's handcuffs and fastened it to the ring next to the payphone. Digging in his pocket, he came up with a quarter.
Here, make your call.
He walked to the doorway. Taking Lou's opposite arm, he pulled. But Lou leaned over and retched. Disgust and anger reared up inside him.
Do not puke in my station,
he yelled. Owen had clearly had enough of this shit, too. He raised a fist. At the same time that Owen punched Lou in the head, King kicked out. One sweep of his big black cop shoe knocked Lou's feet out from under him.
Already leaning over and unbalanced, the drunk went down hard, his posture sending him over to the right. His head hit the wall with the sickening clunk of bone on cinder block. Lou sprawled on the floor and didn't move.
"What did you do?"
Owen yelled. He poked Lou with a toe. Still no movement. Owen bent over the body. One hand went to the drunk's neck. He looked up and mouthed, "He's dead." King lifted a shoulder.
"He was a waste of oxygen, and his liver wouldn't have lasted too much longer anyway."
The man's death didn't bother him, but he'd have to think fast to avoid a legal fallout. The only worry on his mind was his future.
"Now what do we do?"
Owen stood. Removing his campaign hat, he rubbed the top of his skull as if he was trying to stimulate his brain.
"Good luck."
Owen was a decent cop, but he was no Einstein. And this situation was going to need a solid plan. Finesse would be required. Owen dropped his hand and shoved his hat back on his head.
"We have to call the sheriff."
"No." King would do whatever was necessary to fix this.
"My career is not going down for this piece of shit."
"What do we do?"
Owen gestured to the body at their feet.
"We can't just pretend it didn't happen."
"Why not?"
He reached for one of Lou's arms.
"We'll put him in the cell to sleep it off, like we've done before. Nothing unusual about that. When he doesn't wake up, we'll be surprised."
Owen hesitated.
"He just got into a bar fight,"
he argued.
"Who's to say he didn't get hit in the head at PJ's?"
The best lies were the simple ones.
"Okay."
Owen's arm shook as they picked up the body and dragged it into the holding cell. The station was empty. The only other staff member on duty was the dispatcher, and he had a room to himself. They positioned Lou on his side on the cot, his body curled up as if asleep. Then they left him there. King closed the cell door and smiled.
"Done. You're forgetting something."
Owen's gaze indicated the doorway that led into the rear corridor. Mary. He had forgotten about her. Unfortunately for Mary, she was a witness.
"Come on."
He moved toward the doorway.
"What are you gonna do?"
Owen asked.
"Just follow me."
Mary was still cuffed to the ring in the wall. Her eyes widened as he approached her, the whites glowing in the dim corridor. She pressed her back against the wall. She knew what she'd seen and what it meant.
"How about we make a deal, Mary?"
King walked closer. She swallowed, the column of her throat undulating.
"What?"
Her voice trembled.
"I'll drop the charges. You forget you were here tonight."
Mary's quick nod was tense and desperate. He took off her handcuffs.
"I'll even drive you back to PJ's."
With one hand on her bicep, he guided her out the rear door and into the back seat of his car. He glanced over his shoulder at Owen.
"Do your paperwork on Ford as if he passed out. Then go back out like normal. We'll find him dead later."
Owen nodded. Then King drove out into the countryside, away from Gray's Hollow and into neighboring Scarlet Falls. If a client killed Mary, he'd want to put some distance between her body and the crime scene. Mary pressed her hands to the side window.
"This ain't the way to PJ's."
At a rest stop, he pulled off the road and parked. There were no other cars in sight. Insects hummed in the warm August night. He got out of the car and opened the rear door.
"Get out,"
he said. She obeyed. Between the hem of her miniskirt and her fuck-me heels, she wobbled as she climbed from the back seat. She sidled along the car fender. He closed the rear door. As he turned to reach for her arm, she kicked out. His hips jerked sideways. Her foot struck him high on the thigh and grazed his groin. His knees buckled and she bolted, stepping right out of her shoes.
Shit.
Cupping his balls, he limped after her. He recovered his stride after a couple of minutes, but she'd put 100 feet between them. Barefoot, she hit the side of the road, turned and ran straight up the yellow line. Ahead, her bare legs churned, but he was gaining on her. until he saw the one thing that could ruin his plan. Headlights. Screaming, Mary stayed in the center of the road and waved her arms. The vehicle slowed, then stopped.